Kawhi and the refs sink the Sixers, who might be getting Joel Embiid back soon. Draymond leaves early, but the Warriors survive. Inside the end of G League Ignite. And we dig into breaking news regarding the Timberwolves ownership sale. That and more coming up right now on this episode of No Cap Room. Hello, friends. Welcome to No Cap Room. My name is Jake Fisher, senior NBA reporter at Yahoo Sports. Joining me as always, senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports, it's my man, it's your man, it's everyone's man, it's Dan Devine, who showed up to my birthday party last weekend. Hey man, good to see you again.
Good to see you too. Yeah, it was my pleasure to do it, outside of the fact that it was like biblically miserable outside, but inside the bar where the birthday party was, good times had by most. My favorite part of it, and I believe I have the right name, Eric, your friend Eric, you introduced me to him and said, Eric's one of the guys from the group chat. And then Eric kind of like sort of said hi to me, shook my hand. Then he said, how does this guy know about our group chat? And I was like, oh, I make a show with Jake. And then you were like, yeah, no, that's my podcast guy. And he was like, that's Dan Devine. So Eric, if you're listening, yes, it was Dan Devine. And it was lovely to meet you and the rest of Jake's friends as well.
Someone did say, I caught it. Maybe I just heard it because there was a couple of beverages consumed. But I definitely heard someone say, it's my man, it's everyone's man. And they started doing the routine there. So
that's right. So, I mean, listen, if this comes up in the Philly guys group chat, you know, so much for the better. What a wonderful thing that would be.
Definitely biblical rain. I had giant 30 balloons and we stuffed it into I ordered an XL Uber to make sure the trunk had enough space.
We had two umbrellas
to make sure that all the cakes that my lovely lady had made it inside the establishment safely. And when I went back to get said balloons, because of said biblical weather, the trunk opened and the balloons whooshed out in front of all the people in the floor to ceiling windows that were already at the brewery. And I just watched all of their faces have tremendous shock and despair at my expense. And when I walked in, a girl kindly said to me, at least it was the thought that counts. And I said, yeah, sure. That's fine. But they were caught in a tree and they like hung and like daddled around in the wind. And multiple people did say that's how they knew that they were at the right place. So at least it worked out.
What is a better metaphor for turning 30 than the balloons leaving and then flying away from you, but also being just outside your reach, trapped up in a tree, and then going inside someplace to drink? What better metaphor can there be for turning 30? But happy belated birthday to you. And let's talk about the NBA.
Yeah, happy belated birthday to the pod. And we will continue to set sail NC Armada
the
second trip around the seven NBA seas. We're definitely going to sail around the NBA today. We're going to talk about G League Ignite shutting down, which I made some calls about, including with G League President Sharif Abdul-Rahim yesterday, to get some further clarification on some things I heard from the general managers around the G League that I definitely love and adore. And if anyone's listening, I repeat, I'm looking to compile the largest unofficial collection of official G League gear possible. So that being said, Clippers Sixers last night with the home team of the group chat friends falling, unfortunately, from those guys' perspectives, very fortunately for the Los Angeles Clippers' perspective, being that they were in pretty dire need of a win and Kawhi Leonard looked awesome. Dan, I know this is a game that you were definitely paying attention to last night, so I'm going to step aside and let you cook like Kawhi and Paul sometimes let James, like they sometimes let Paul, but mostly like this is Kawhi's show ultimately at the end of the day. Like I think he reminded a lot of people last night, even though there's not really like a need of a reminder. He's pretty much been Kawhi Leonard all season long.
Yeah, I think the big takeaway from this is just like how hard things are for the Sixers right now, really. I mean, you had the Clippers went small for most of the entire fourth quarter. And when it got to winning time down the stretch, the goal was like, we are going to double the ball out of Tyrese Maxey's hands at every opportunity. and make somebody else do something with it. And in a couple of possessions, the Sixers were able to do something with it. You know, Nick Batum hit a corner three, Buddy Hield hit a deep one. But for the most part, it's like, if you can force the ball out, and this has been the story of the Sixers for months now, if you can get the ball out of Tyrese Maxey's hands, it's on somebody else to create, and there just isn't enough creation on the team. And that wound up, that combined with, so that's like the basketball takeaway from this. The virality, hilarity takeaway from this is the last couple of possessions of the game. It's after Kawhi Leonard, you know, gets downhill, gets to the rim for end ones. Kelly Oubre is like going to match him. And there's something kind of beautiful about Kelly Oubre being the, like, who's our answer to Kawhi Leonard?
There's a lot of things kind of beautiful about Kelly Oubre.
There's extraordinarily beautiful about Kelly Oubre. Yeah, but what's our answer to Kawhi Leonard rampaging to the rim? Kelly Oubre, get downhill. And Kawhi clapped him at the rim, like pinned the blocked one drive into the basket stanchion, a wedgie. Shouts out to our guys at No Dunks, a block into a wedgie in the final minute of a tight game. And then with the Clippers up one, Kelly Oubre gets another shot at it, drives in contact from Kawhi again, or from Paul George again, I believe, and then doesn't get a shot off in time. And so it's two straight drives in the final minute of a game, a home game for the Sixers that they really needed. And they're looking to get something good going in their playoff push, play-in push at this point. And no call. Nick Nurse goes nuts. Kelly Oubre goes over to the refs and calls. You don't condone the language, but watching a man walk over and like in what appeared to be a calm, even tone with like politician hand gestures, like directing points, you're a to every one of the refs, and then goes, okay, like making, I make sure you got it, okay? And then after that, your dad's a or sorry, your mom's a your dad's a your grandma's a to all of them. And then just sort of like, all right, he walks away. And it's like as clear as a bell. Like, I'm not a lip reader, but you don't need to be. It was pretty clear what he was saying there. He gets hustled out. They go. And then after the game, he apologized for it. He's like, you know, heat of the moment. We're all competitors here. No one's perfect. The refs aren't perfect. I try to represent God in the best way I can. That maybe fell a little bit short in that particular respect. But, you know, we've all been there. If nothing else, you get I think that clip's going to live in like Philly fan lore forever.
I want that clip cut by either super producer John Gennaro or someone from our social video team and have Dan's voice superimposed over Kelly's beautiful model lips and have that blasted across the internet. Please do that for me.
I mean, I find it disrespectful that you think I don't have beautiful model lips, but all right, fair enough.
I didn't say you did it.
Listen, it was pretty heavily implied. We'll see. The other thing, though, you know, there's all, you know, the way that Kelly Oubre and Nick Nurse sort of went nuts, the refs after the game kind of said they think they have a point. Keith Pompey, the Philadelphia Inquirer, was the pool reporter, talked to crew chief Kevin Scott. And the quote was, on the last play on the floor, in real time, the crew interpreted the play as the defender jumping vertically. However, in post-game video review, we did observe some slight drift to his left by the defender, Paul George, and a foul should have been ruled. So before the shot doesn't get off, Kelly Oubre should be going to the line, you know, with a chance to tie or maybe win that game in the final seconds. They don't get that call, you know. Sure, it's nice to hear after the fact that they should have made it, but pretty cold comfort for the Sixers. They've now lost 9 of 13. They're in eighth place in the East. Their most likely situation here is playing a road game in the play-in to start. And
but wait, is that a crotch chop music?
the D-Generation X music?
Because look, man, there's definitely a ton of optimism that Joel Embiid's going to be back. And potentially, from what I've been hearing, like as early as next week, like this could be, I'm not going to say definitively, because it does sound very definitively that his return is almost entirely, I don't know exactly on the scale of Joel to Sixers decision, but
who's ultimately making the call on this, and what adverbs and qualifiers we can put on it?
For sure. But he's going to have a clear, real responsibility and like onus of when he's back or not, but definitely was told this week that he's playing at least 4-on-4, which is one below the coveted 5-on-5, of course, for those of us who are still trying to learn simple addition.
That's analytics right there.
And look, like, this was the plan all along. We've been saying this before. We've written this back at the trade deadline that he was going to be able to come back with at least like a significant sample before the playoffs. And that continues to be the word that I'm hearing out of Philadelphia. I think there was even like a whisper of hope that maybe he could have gotten back for this game last night, this 327 matchup, the James Harden revenge game. Didn't happen, of course, but I definitely just what the word is, it seems like first week of April, which, you know, if he's going to have some time before the regular season ends, there's really only 2 weeks of April where the regular season is happening. So that's what I told the group chat. I did not report it there, although there was some questions in there about the stampingness, the officialness of my word when I was saying, hey guys, get excited. But yeah, with the playing picture that you were talking about, Dan, it would be, I'm not going to lie, I'm definitely rooting for Philly to be in the play-in, just like I would love for LeBron and KD and Luke, like the most like challenging situation for one of these contenders to like have to climb. It just adds to the juice and the drama of the 40 games and 40 nights and the NBA big that Lil Dicky, back when he was a marketing executive, created or worked on, that I asked his people for me to interview him for, and he denied that interview request. Speaking of Philly people, come on, Lil Dicky. So, but the big man, big Joel Embiid could be back very, very soon. That is the word I've got.
Cross chops coming soon to a theater near you. But you mentioned the importance of the game for the Clippers. Like, they have been shaky as all get out since the All-Star break, basically. I mean, even before that, but I think they were 8-10 since the All-Star break going into last night. Like, they've been one of the worst defenses in the league. So for them, and not only that, like, Ty Lue straight up called them out. I think after their Monday loss to the Pacers, he said the question was about their identity. I think James Harden had said, like, we got to find our identity. Teams are scoring easy on us. Not for nothing, James. They're scoring most easily when you're on the floor, but that's neither here nor there.
Buddy Hield made him feel very comfortable with that last night.
And Harden had a really nice strip on Nick Batum last couple of minutes of the game as well. Like, he stood up and was accounted for when they needed it the most. But, Ty Lue earlier this week, the question was to him, put it to him, like, what's your identity? And he said, quote, this is from our guy, Law Murray at The Athletic, right now, do we have an identity? I think, yeah, we're soft. That can be an identity, if you want to call it that. Like, we got to be tougher mentally and physically. And then it looks like all hell's about to break loose for them last night. They go down 15 to a Sixers team that hasn't been very good for a while. They claw it back. Kawhi was brutal for three quarters and then was nails the last 9 minutes. Like, winning sometimes when you don't have your best stuff is something that can galvanize a team. And, get through that. They get back up on the right side of the 4-5 matchup with the Pelicans. They've got Russell Westbrook back now. They, tap into, again, that thing that has made them sort of special when they can go small, Amir Coffey at the 5 or Kawhi at the 5, whatever, and kind of be swarming defensively, shooting and driving everywhere. They looked a little more like the version of them that we had seen while they were kind of taking the league by storm. The hope for Clippers fans and for the Clippers is that they're able to build on that these last couple of weeks, because they, the version of the Pelicans they could have to deal with has been, on a roll for a while. That might be a tough matchup for them to have to see in the first round.
Yeah, the who's going to be in the play-in picture for the East with Philly, Miami, and Indiana kind of all battling in that 6-7-8 slate. We pretty much have had Chicago, Atlanta locked into the 9-10 for, yeah, it seems like eons now. In the West, we have the Clippers and New Orleans, of course, battling for that 4-5, as Dan mentioned. We've got the other battle at 6 with, Phoenix and Dallas and what have you. Or the Golden State's really in a bind here, trying to fend off the Rockets, who have won now 10 straight games after beating the Oklahoma City Thunder, excuse me, in overtime without Shea, but still massive win. But we'll start in Golden State first, where the Warriors on a little bit of a road trip here. I believe they head to Charlotte next, if memory serves. And that, of course, will be the Steph Curry homecoming, and Who knows what type of 50-point explosion he could be prone to do there. But last night, they overcome Draymond Green being ejected early yet again. And I guess all I have to say on that is at least it was because he was arguing with an official and not physically damaging an opponent. Like, that's the one positive to say, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, baby steps, right? Baby steps in terms of we're all trying to get better. We're all working on things. You know, as Kelly Oubre said, we're all trying to, you know, represent God in the best way we can. And, you know, Draymond didn't get there last night. But he, yeah, there no one got yoked. So that, there's something to be said for that. You could just see it was less than 4 minutes into the game. And the Warriors have been... They've had some blowout losses. They're you know, now seeing the Rockets racing up behind them. You know, this is a team that we expect so much of. They expect so much of themselves. And for them to be like, can we cling to 10th? Is just like, they're in such dire straits there. And so for this to be the way the game starts, it's so deflating. You could see that the clip, and I think I saw it through NBC Sports Warriors, that Twitter account, but like, it's all over the place, of Steph Curry's reaction after Draymond gets run. And like, he's got his jersey over his face. He's shaking his head. He's staring at the ground. You know, yeah. Bruce Frazier coming over, patting him on the back. Like, the amount of frustration. I mean,
he did maul Patty Mills the night before. Like, that's part of the context of the ref joke I made.
Yeah, no, fair. And to do that to Patty Mills, of all people, my goodness. But there, you know, you felt the weight of all of the time Steph Curry has been like going to bat for Draymond, and all of everything that everybody has said. They go to the mattresses for him because they know he's worth it. They go the extra mile for him because they know he's worth it. And I know I've written about it earlier in the season. You know, we've talked about it ad nauseum, that feeling of he is the person who gives them their sort of snarl and their edge. And also it is high level defensive play that was absent when he was gone. He makes the offense click in a different way. But then when the double edged sword cuts you like it did there, you could just see how hard that was for Steph. And then after the game, he's very clearly like tight about it and doesn't want to necessarily, you know, he's asked what he can say about it, you know, what his reaction was, what the frustration was. And it was just, all I'll say is we need him. He knows that. We all know that. So whatever it takes to keep him on the floor and be available, that's what's got to happen. You don't want to have self-inflicted wounds. And that's the state of affairs for them. You know, like they cannot afford them. They have left themselves no margin for error in that, due in large part to how much of this season has it been a self-inflicted wound incurred from Draymond Green. And they're able to pull out the win. The next thing Steph said after that, though, was like how extremely proud he was of everybody else that pulled in the same direction to get that win, to bounce back after that deflating ejection and get them moving in the right direction to take that win. That's the kind of stuff you hope they hope to be able to build on.
Yeah.
You know, but the Draymond question is going to loom over all of that as it keeps going.
That was the most emphatic night celebration I've seen him hit in a long, long time, when he was scurrying down the sideline after the vintage step back three to ice it with like 38 ticks to go. So, yeah, I mean, he clearly still got it. Clay was looking good last night. GP2 back healthy, slid right into the Draymond role, as he did whenever Draymond went to the bench during that finals run 2 years ago. So, like, you squint and you see what could be there. And I believe they have the best road record in the NBA since February 1st. If it's not that mark anymore, they are still in the very top tier of the league and have just run through this, started this road trip that they're on right now. So that's just, they still, to me, and maybe this is just the championship bias and the East Coast elite media only caring about the Warriors, Lakers, and Knicks. But like, I understand why there's such belief and optimism in that building that like, we just got to get in. And then you're telling us there's a chance. And I would love to see, because if they're 10, they can only get to 8. I would just love to see a Denver Warriors first round matchup. That'd be fucking sick. So
Also, before we get off of them real quick, shout out to Andrew Wiggins. He's been up and down all season. Such a difficult, you know, like the personal issues that he was out, all the different things that have been going on with him. 23.6 rebounds, guarding Franz and Paolo, and like a huge game from them when they absolutely had to have it. That's the guy, like, has always been that swing piece for them. When they've got the other stuff in place, he's the one who can be the burst of athleticism, the multi-positional defender, all that stuff. When he plays well, they're really, really hard to beat. And that was an absolute gotta-have-it game from him last night.
The only problem, of course, is the Rockets launching from Texas back into the thick of the TM play and push, which is kind of funny to me on a personal note because... Remember when I wrote about Alperen Şengün and we talked about him very kindly on the pod? That was like late February, so like almost a month ago. When I did that reporting, I sat down with Alpi in like mid-January, held the interview. So I called back some people around the team just to make sure some thoughts were up to date. And like everyone I talked to said things like, because they were like 4.5, 5 games out of the 10 spot at that point. Everyone there was like, well... Yeah, like it's been a good year. We just kind of need like a 6-game win streak to, but like, I don't know if we're really capable of that.
Sure.
And then Alpi gets hurt, and it kind of, not to say losing someone who is posting all-star caliber numbers that we were comparing to Baby Jokic and Sabonis is like a good thing, but the silver lining definitely seems to be, I think we talked about this a bit last week, the shift to Amen Thompson as their small ball 5, and it's really kind of unlocked everything for Houston on both sides of the floor. Like Ime Udoka in his second season as a head coach, which it kind of seems like he's been doing it longer, but that's of course not the case. He's just always been someone that's been very widely credited for getting the best individually out of players in one-on-one defensive matchups and teaching how to switch everything and really defend even when you're in like a negative moment or a minus matchup because of just the flow of things. It helps when you have all these guys who are more switchable, and Amen can be more of like a DHO type of like secondary piece offensively compared to like a true hub like Şengün was. But Jalen Green, man, like... For all the talk back in February about, you know, the Rockets, what exactly did they propose to Brooklyn? He was definitely put on the table for my reporting back then and what have you. Like, the dude is just going absolute inferno and was going closing bucket for closing bucket with your guy, J-Dub, back, you know, last night in the fourth quarter and in overtime. Also, give a quick shout out to Josh Giddey for his maligned offensive production throughout the season, the roller coaster that that's been with the shooting. Just dropping in floater after floater when the going got rough and the game needed it. So shout out Josh Giddey. I see you standing up in the face of all your shooting woes. But yeah, man, I think the true thing here is I'm end of the 5. Not sure if that's the direct switch that is totally unlocked Jalen Green, but the last thing I'll say, it's going to create a really interesting decision for Houston this offseason, no matter yes. how this season ends up, if they make the play-in or not, because both Jalen and Şengün are going to be eligible for very lucrative extensions. And I don't know if it's cost-effective for where the Rockets are trending or if they even have like the palate to pay. This is me thinking out loud. I'm not reporting anything, not saying anything definitive, but to me, and just looking at the tea leaves and from what I've heard over the past year and a half about that build, it's just going to bring really interesting questions. And like, it's good. It is a good question to have when your team is performing better than expected and you don't know exactly which guy is fully worthwhile. That's a pretty good problem to have.
Yeah, it means that those bets you took in those first rounds, like actually they're paying off, which is, you know, that comes with complications, but it's a hell of a lot better than the alternative. So many things bouncing around in my head. First off, we're talking about this in part because John Gennaro, our super producer, was like, Dan seemed to be bouncing off the couch watching this game last night. really a sad testament to the state of affairs in my life. That's like my excitement at a Thursday late March or Wednesday late March Rockets Thunder game is so palpable that the producer's like, we got to get it into the show. We got to bottle that.
Is it sad or is it great that you just love what you do? How about
that's
that?
One way to look at it. I mean, I appreciate it. That's a kinder, it's a glass half full take. You mentioned Josh Giddey standing up in the face of the struggles he's had. The most important shot he made, or most impressive shot he made, he was sitting down. He went down for a loose ball, and from the seat of his pants, hit like an 8-footer or a 10-footer or whatever, which looked like a horse shot. So it was very cool to see him do that in a real game. Yeah. The Jalen Green thing, Matt, like, you are right about the challenges that it presents in terms of deciding what kind of organization do we want to be? Who do we want to prioritize? Do we want to pay everybody? Because the big like existential question here is Jalen Green going nuts like this because Alperen Şengün is gone and because you are playing Jabari Smith Jr. as a stretch five and Amen Thompson as like a playmaking four who can be that your screen and roll guy. And the lanes are just so much more open for Jalen Green to get downhill. And then once you're worried about his drive, he can get to the step back, hit like a nasty step back. I think I want to say like about a minute and a half left.
Yeah.
The one on
the right wing.
Yep. Or a little over a minute left. 1:05 left in overtime to make that a two possession game again after Giddey hit another floater. The way he's been. And so that when you've got a team off balance, a defense or like that, we don't know whether to play you for the drive or to the step back. And then when you're also willing to playmake off of that, like keep the drive and kick to Jabari Smith Jr. in the corner to make like he's in that place, in that rhythm where he's got the defense on the back foot and the whole menu's open to him. He's seeing and making the reason. And he doesn't have to be like an advanced Trae Young level playmaker, but like when you can compromise the defense with the threat of the drive, with the threat of the pull up, everything opens up for you. And it's at the point now where like the rising tide of this is impossible to ignore. So we've talked before about the Rockets being like a legit solid defense all season long. And that's been their baseline under Udoka. It's why you pay for Fred VanVleet, who has been awesome at the point of attack. You know, like the veer back deflections and steals, like every possession is sort of a little bit harder because of the ball pressure there. It's why you bring in Dylan Brooks to take on the top assignments and to make everything harder, all these sorts of things. The issue was just going to be, can they score enough? Since the trade deadline, league average offense, 15th. Since the All-Star break, 11th in offensive efficiency. Since the last month, third. That's all through cleaning the glass, which strips out garbage time. And the ascending, the arrow going up there is Jalen Green. His last 14 games, 29 points a game. Since Şengün's injury, 31.5 on 51, 48, 81 shooting. And he's taken more than 10 threes a game. Like it is an avalanche roll. Like the snowball's rolling downhill with this offense. And so it has made them, like if you have that baseline defense and then the offense comes along to meet it, you can do some things. And they've been absolutely, I think, 12-2 in their last 14 games because they've got everything rolling. And this was like, it was so impressive to me. Like Oklahoma City's really good with or without Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, really, really good. And Oklahoma City punched them in the mouth late in that game. Second half run, I think it was 15-5 in the third quarter to take control of that game. Houston gets it back within their grasp midway through the fourth. A couple of buckets for OKC. They go up five with less than 2 minutes to go. And Houston just takes the shot and keeps coming. And they get it to OT. They take advantage in OT. They put the pedal down and they walk away with that win in Oklahoma City. Super impressive for a young team. Super impressive for a team just kind of figuring it out. If they get into the play-in, obviously, that's a huge deal in and of itself for what it means for Golden State. But that is a team that is playing with a ton of confidence and a ton of self-possession and the general sense of like, we know who we are and what we want to get to right now. That is what it's all you can ask for a team this young, to develop that spine, to develop that culture, that sense of where you want to be going. And it's been really, really impressive to watch them grow.
We can all watch Golden State versus Houston Thursday, April 4th.
Monster game.
Would be awesome. It really would be awesome. And look, like the other aspect of the Jalen Green conversation, I think is interesting to me. He right now is making a run for the greatest alumni of G League Ignite, which the NBA / G League president, Sharif Abdul-Rahim, who we mentioned at the top, announced last week that they were closing their doors after what will amount to four pseudo seasons. The first year was a weird COVID bubble entity that I definitely dive into in my latest. That should be going up well before this podcast reaches the public for consumption at yahoosports.com. Because look, like when Adam Silver went to the podium at All-Star Weekend and basically just dropped the hammer that they were reassessing, to be frank, I probably should have watched the YouTube rollback of that presser to see like how it was presented, because I don't remember if it was like someone just asking a question or it was a talking point that he wanted to bring up. But regardless, the fact that just a couple weeks later the league has just announced that Ignite is done, it took I think a lot of G League personnel by surprise that it was happening so quickly. I think the initial response was that it was going to be something that maybe happened at the end of next season. But when you really peel back the layers, I mean, the league announced part that this was, I mean, and has said, Sharif said this to me on the phone Wednesday, that the reason for closing this is that there's no longer a need for the NBA to help solve this problem of giving American-born players an opportunity to turn professional before they become draft eligible, thanks to the name, image, and likeness money that we're seeing Golkey from Oakland sign TurboTax deals and shoot a ball in a ballroom in the hotel and make money. Like, that's just the new era that we're in. And I believe that to be absolutely a factor and a major factor into why, because like there is not necessarily a true benefit for Cooper Flagg, let's say, to go to G League Ignite as opposed to go to Duke.
Right.
I've kind of said for a while, like you look back to Trae Young, a large reason why Trae Young became a top five pick in the 2017 draft, I think I want to say, was that he played on ESPN three times a week and the whole basketball watching nation got to kind of fall in love with the character as much as the player, who was Ice Trae and shimmying and putting up. I remember back working weekend desk shifts at SI, ESPN had like a Trae Young 20 and 10 tracker going because he did it for like 14 straight games.
Right.
So that's definitely like part of it. The other major interesting aspect to me is like the problem that the NBA was trying to solve is because they have this still upheld, you must be 19 in the calendar year of the NBA draft, which if we flash back to April 2020 when Ignite was created, that was considered, to quote Sharif, a foregone conclusion. And if you asked anyone in the NBA on a team side, people around the union, I mean, everyone was talking about the proverbial double draft that was coming.
Yep.
After it was going to be the high school, you know, forbidden from entering the league was going to be waived in this new CBA that got ratified last year. And from all my conversations and reporting, that just never became a significant portion of the conversations and the negotiations for this latest CBA that now runs through 29-30. So like, I don't think we're going back to a high school game anyway, partially because all these kids now just can make, I mean, most kids can make far more money in college than they would professionally elsewhere. So that's just one thing. The other thing, though, and what complicates Ignite's legacy to me and from my conversations is that, you know, it was never originally supposed to be a team in the G League. They were supposed to like barnstorm and play international national teams and whatnot. And the second they shifted into what was their third season, you know, the last season and this one, to Henderson, Nevada, and function as another team in the 30-ish team G League in their 50-game season, Ignite didn't have the same budget as other teams. They were paying from my reporting, their veteran players as much as $150,000, if not more, compared to the standard G League salary of $40,500. They were allowed to just like take other teams' players whose rights were held before the season without compensating other teams back, which definitely was a sore spot for a lot of G League GMs. They weren't allowed to be in the draft or make midseason trades, but they just like kind of operated as like the league's team.
Right.
In a league where, look, like not so many teams care necessarily about winning at that level, but you've got plenty of young executives and coaches as well as players who are trying to win night after night and prove that they belong in the NBA. And this kind of outlier that I have been told based off my conversations basically operated on a budget three times as greater as their opponents, and also was 2-30 also was 2-31 this season.
That'll do it.
Harm
your case.
I think there were other weights on the scale tipping this in the direction of no longer being run, in addition to, yes, the major challenges and complications that came from this new NIL era that definitely came into play after Ignite was launched. So that's my ramble. Any responses, any thoughts?
I mean, the main thing is I'm excited to see the story, because I putting it all in context that way, like I will admit I did not pay tons and tons of attention to G League Ignite in the same way that I don't necessarily pay tons and tons of attention to, you know, the Osceola Magic or whatever. Although I do pay more attention to them now. Shouts out to Dylan Murphy, former blog boy, who's now coaching that team. But the component of NIL having a major impact there makes sense to me, because if the idea was provide a path to professionalism that like effectively doesn't force a 18-year-old to go to college if he doesn't want to, allowing him the opportunity to enter the workforce and, you know, be paid for his services playing basketball, like that made a ton of sense to me.
You talked about it on Divine Intervention with Jared Dubin Tuesday.
Yeah, that's right. We talked about it a little bit. And I was always sort of on board for the idea of removing the age minimum, removing the, you know, like allow it. If a team wants to pay a kid to play and develop, then they should have the opportunity to do so. And the idea of an NBA organization having greater flexibility to do that and to, you know, to be the spur of the development made sense to me. I think that's kind of the interesting part to me, though. And I was reading our colleague, Jeff Eisenberg, who used to cover college basketball specifically for us, and now feature writer, does a lot of college work too, wrote about this after Adam Silver's press conference at All-Star Weekend. And one of the things that he sort of highlighted was the question of how much development is actually happening there. And you mentioned the really like rancid record this season, but the idea of if players are not, if you're doing more sort of individual skill development work, then, and if that's sort of the priority more so than like learn how to win and contribute to winning in a team context, then how well is that player being developed for the NBA level versus being at, you know, on campus on, you know, a high level program that's trying to win in March Madness, or, you know, the Australian like NBL, you know, where there's a proper league there that the young players that are going in there are getting an opportunity. There's more open questions about like what's the nature of and the quality of the development that's happening there. And if you're getting prospects that come in who are less lustrous than when they exit the program than when they went into it, like Scoot Henderson, and some of this is just, you know, Scoot Henderson wound up in a draft that had Brandon Miller, and Brandon Miller was a riser, right? But like Scoot Henderson goes in at two, comes out at three. Jalen Green goes in, maybe he's one, he comes out at two. Jonathan Kuminga goes in top five, he comes out at seven. You know, there are, and that's even before you get to, you know, Deshaun Nix or, you know, whatever, other guys that that wound up being second round picks or undrafted players coming out of Ignite. So that question of, for who, like who's it serving at a certain point? Yeah. And if it's not serving anybody, then yeah, shuttering the doors makes some sense.
I will say this in defense of Ignite, as one G League person I talked to said to me, just because Scoot came in at two and fell to three doesn't mean he fell. Maybe he was overranked.
Totally right? Fair. Totally
and maybe
fair.
Maybe just over the course of a greater sample size, it was greater determined that he was a couple spots lower. And to fall from two to three isn't exactly a catastrophic decline. And the numbers that I was given are that from Ignite's inception, that April 2020 launch point to now, they compared to any other program, whether it be college, overtime elite, Australia's NBL league that LaMelo Ball and RJ Hampton went and participated in right before Ignite launched. I think that was part of it too, that they wanted to keep these guys stateside or give an opportunity for these kids to stay stateside. So in that time period, Ignite has the number, they rank number one across the board in all these categories. Total draft picks, top 10 draft picks, minutes played in the NBA, and contract money earned in the NBA. And that's before Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga are going to get lucrative extensions this summer. I mean, doesn't matter if that's the Rockets figuring out between one of those two guys or whatever, and he goes elsewhere or he stays, or Jonathan Kuminga's situation at Golden State. Like, those two dudes are getting paid, whether it's in the extension stuff or if they have to go wait until next summer. They're getting $100 billion plus deals. That seems pretty almost guaranteed at this point. So that's only going to add to the list. I will say, like, the individual skill work stuff too is definitely a problem that I think coaches around the league just feel is happening with the young players at large, that these kids are all going to their skill trainers and they don't necessarily, especially on defense, you hear it time and again, coaches complain about young players' inability to grasp team defensive concepts because they're not really doing it at a youth level. I think the other big issue this season in regards to why they were so porous in like the standings, they had 8 draft eligible prospects on this team. They had I think it was like 18 players total on the roster, when your average G League team only has 12 or 13 guys. And the best version of Ignite that played in the bubble, the G League bubble in February 2021, that finished 8-7 with Jalen Green and Kuminga on it, those were the two stars, like star prospects. And they only had 3 other kids. And it's like really hard to build a winning, like, look at the Rockets, right? They wanted to have 3 veterans basically sharing the load with 2 or 3, depending on mix and matching lineups, young lottery picks to balance out that learning curve. And it's really hard to do that when you need to get 8 of those dudes, 8 of those young kids on the floor. And it seems like maybe Ignite bit off a little bit more than they could chew this season in terms of like the young talent they were trying to grow, because you can't grow everyone if you have only 5 spots on the floor and you're playing 50 games, and you do need these veterans like John Jenkins and Jeremy Pargo and Norris Cole on the floor to do that. So, yeah, I think overall, my general takeaway is that there were mixed results, which typically most experiments have.
Sure. You know,
they netted out a couple. I mean, at this rate, like, we're talking about Jalen Green, like, he could be something special. We're really excited about Jonathan Kuminga. You know, I spent some time with him in January, like we talked about. So there's stuff to be excited about. The jury will certainly be out on Scoot Henderson after a very kind of like a lost rookie season for him from injury and whatnot, and just not exactly a lot of upward trajectory across the board in Portland. But they'll have one more player left, Dink Pate, who signed a 2-year deal that was like the initial. I know Kristen Peek, our draft analyst, wrote about that in the initial reaction to Ignite closing about what's going to happen for him. Sharif told me that they're going to do as a league what they can to place him on one of their 31 teams if that's something that he wants to do next season, because they will be at 31 with Mexico City Capitanes being the one team outside of the 30 affiliates now that Phoenix will be the last team having a team. So yeah, for more on Ignite, yahoosports.com. I'll tweet that story out as well when it gets live.
Also, and check out, I know you mentioned Kristen. Kristen talked to Vinny on Good Word with Goodwill recently about the future of Ignite. And, well, let's go cross sport for this one. Our pals at the College Football Enquirer, Dan Wetzel, Pat Forty, Ross Dellinger, our colleagues, back when Adam Silver first talked about this, they sort of discussed it in the context of the changing nature of college sports. So we have a full bouquet of coverage options here at Yahoo Sports. You can check that out on the YouTube channel or on the podcast feeds.
There you go. We all have a full company, bouquet. Man.
Brutal.
No, fantastic. We'll have more of this bouquet after this ad break coming up right now on No Cap Room. Welcome back to No Cap Room, where during our ad break, we learned that Glenn Taylor dropped the mic on Mark Lurie and Alex Rodriguez. For those who are unfamiliar with those three names, you probably know one of them because he played baseball. Glenn Taylor has been the longtime mom and pop shop owner of Minnesota, the Timberwolves and the Lynx. And Mark Lurie was the partner with A-Rod, who was definitely the big kahuna of that ownership group that was coming in. They had agreed to a deal starting July 2021 where they were going to be paying increments, 20% increments, to purchase the Timberwolves from Mr. Taylor piece by piece, year after year. And they had this last final 40% payment that was supposed to be due in 2023. And it got derailed. The Timberwolves, Dan, you take the statement. You seem to have the embodiment of Glenn Taylor in these words.
I mean, that's dark. What I do have is a link to a statement that the Timberwolves published while we were breaking for an ad. So Glenn Taylor, general partner of Minnesota Timberwolves Basketball Limited Partnership, confirms the expiration of the option of Mark Lurie and Alex Rodriguez to acquire controlling interest in the Timberwolves and Lynx. Under the terms of the purchase agreement that they reached, the closing was required to occur within 90 days following the exercise notice. So when they actually say, we're going to do this 3 months from there. The 90-day period expired on March 27th, 2024, Wednesday. Under certain circumstances, according to the statement, the buyer could have been entitled to a limited extension. However, those circumstances did not occur. And here is Glenn Taylor's quote. I will continue to work with Mark, Alex, and the rest of the ownership group to ensure our teams have the necessary resources to compete at the highest levels on and off the court, said Taylor. The Timberwolves and Lynx are no longer for sale. So this comes after like a week and a half of upheaval and uncertainty about the, you know, securing the final final amounts of the financing. I think Axios, I might have the breaker wrong, so forgive me, but I think it was Axios that had it on March 19th, that the deal involving the private equity firm Carlyle Group that would have helped to finance the final $300 million here that fell through. The NBA rejected the deal to have the Carlyle Group put it in. That led to Glenn Taylor telling Darren Wolfson, Minnesota beat guy, they had an equity group that was going to come in and put in $300 million. And that equity group has either withdrawn or the NBA has denied them. They have to go out and find new revenue. That I do know.
Yeah.
Then that led to another group coming in. I think it's Dyad Capital Partners stepped in to try to keep it on track. That was a week and a half ago. And now a week and a half later, no dice, it sounds like, on the sale of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Look, this has kind of been something that's been roiling beneath the surface pretty much since the beginning of when this deal was struck, because we've had a couple teams be sold in the last decade plus, right? Phoenix changed hands, Charlotte changed hands, go back to Steve Ballmer taking over the Clippers. This is the only one that had such a prorated purchase sale, and the reasoning was always said to be, by industry sources, by investment bankers that I spoke to about this, dating back till, I mean, last fall, I remember making calls because Phoenix and Charlotte were basically both, Phoenix was for sale. There was all this talk that Charlotte was next and that it was happening while this other Timberwolves thing was happening. Those three stories connected. I was calling around and Minnesota-based figures were all saying that There were massive questions on whether Lurie and Rodriguez actually had or would have the money to make this sale happen. And there was all this talk of people they were lobbying to come into the group and add spending power to make this thing happen. One of the parties that I was told from multiple sources was the Lazary family that, of course, left the Milwaukee Bucks ownership faction. So, and I believe they were trying to sell percentage stakes of the franchise at north of the $1.5 billion mark that they agreed to purchase it from Glenn Taylor for. So all those signs were clearly pointing to this exact outcome, that they potentially would not have had the money to make this thing happen, which from the standpoint of a Timberwolves fan or Timberwolves players, of course, doesn't really matter unless all this adds up to is the ownership group that the part of Glenn Taylor's statement to ensure our teams had the necessary resources to compete at the highest levels. That's the big question mark here, because as the Timberwolves have made their climb up the Western Conference and we await to see how successful they can be in this postseason when Karl Anthony Towns returns from his latest injury, his deal's quite pricey. Anthony Edwards' next max extension that comes in next year, quite pricey. They just signed Jalen McDaniels to a $140 million extension. Dan, you got something?
Anthony Edwards' deal is also going to be even more pricey because it's a pretty good shot he's going to make All-NBA. So the Rose Rule escalator in that contract is going to go from whatever the regular rookie max to the 30% and rising.
So the question has been amongst the NBA cap nerds and crunchers out there, like, who is going to be fitting this bill for this very expensive team that does appear to be worth it, right? Like, we haven't seen them in April and May and June yet, but when healthy, they have been pretty much wire to wire, either a game out or holding the one seed the entire season. Anthony Edwards, to your point, All-NBA candidate, like, has absolutely made good on all of the talk this summer about he's got next, and probably even then some, right? He was probably the biggest culprit of not taking All-Star Weekend seriously, but he has taken game after game after game seriously. And that's really what the 65 game rule was for all these awards that are going to impact those All-NBA voting situations that Ant's going to factor into heavily. But it is just kind of wild that this happened. Like, it seems like there were several investment bankers who are and banks who are routinely involved in NBA team sales that were always skeptical that Alex Rodriguez in particular, any entity including him, was going to be able to get a deal of this magnitude across the finish line. The fact that the skeptics won, that the doubters and the haters were right, I think they'll be fine, right? I think men who are in the mix of billion-dollar entities are going to be able to pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and move on. But this is definitely something to reflect upon because, yeah, like, the league does take, as expected, like, incredibly vested interest in who these owners are stewarding these precious few franchises. And with the wealth of interest in people who want to purchase either the Las Vegas team or whatever team will be joining that and what have you when this inevitable or considered to be inevitable expansion comes, like, this is going to be context and kind of even like a roadmap of what not to do. And I think this will have some type of ripple effect on the general landscape of buying teams, especially being that we're seeing it now that these new owners want to come in, whether it be Ishbia and Phoenix, or that is kind of the word about how the new faction in Charlotte, they're going to be very involved in the basketball operations after kind of training behind the scenes, doing it as minority partners in Atlanta, that, like, if the league is approving a new owner to come in and then make very aggressive wholesale changes, and that's not what Charlotte did. Of course, they are having a very patient approach with all this. That's certainly what Phoenix did, just mortgaging everything and the carpets and then the wood under the carpets and then the bedrock of their building to go get Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal. Like, this is just, it's fascinating to me. There are so many haters and doubters that said they were never going to have the money, and they didn't. And Glenn Taylor, I think my understanding is, I'll be curious to find out what the actual, if we ever find out, if he gets to keep the money, because they'll have paid 60%. They have paid 60% of that $1.5 billion number.
That's which, just to be clear, is $900 million.
So did Glenn Taylor, does he just get to pocket that money? And now that's now the money that the Timberwolves ownership group gets to back this expensive roster with and give Chris Finch and Tim Connelly and their staffs extensions after they potentially do well in the postseason. Like, maybe that's the whole rub here, but we're going to have to find out, because obviously this is like, this is the initial reaction to us finding this out. But yeah, it is quite theatrical in this entertainment industry that the NBA is, that this didn't come to fruition.
So I don't know. I don't have a ton more to add. I'm not working my ownership in investment banking sources. Jake, I don't know if you know this about me. I don't have a whole lot of those. I will say in the immediate right now, the Wolves are trying to get the one seed in the West. And you wonder if like something, no, and players and coaches legendarily great at compartmentalizing and just focusing on what is the next task you have to accomplish? Maybe and also if there's uncertainty outside the gym, it's us against the world, whatever. But like, you wonder if weird instability, especially when it comes down to who's paying for that extension? Does this mean an issue for who we keep around, whatever? Like, does that wobble a team that has been rock solid and extremely impressive and mature all season? And, as you mentioned earlier, the 6-1 run, I think, or 6-1 or 7-1 since Karl Towns went down, like this team has walked through a lot of issues this season and stayed afloat. Like, you hope this doesn't wobble them down near the finish line here. The other thing is what you put into context, the Mark Lowry, Alex Rodriguez question about where people saying that there were some concerns about where the financing would come from. Glenn Taylor has also like walked up to the edge of selling the Wolves multiple times before and hasn't done it. And went back, because I think this process with Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lowry started in like 2021, I think. And in the reporting around that, there were notes of like, oh, by the way, there was this time in 2017 where he was engaged with this Grizzlies minority owner on a purchase agreement, but then didn't go forward with that. And there was this other time that, so like, I will be interested in finding out how much of this is you guys just didn't get the money up and how much of this is, upon further review, I actually don't want to leave.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because based off of the early reporting and stuff I've learned, like it does seem like if they did have the money, it just wasn't in a way that Glenn Taylor or the NBA wanted it, or both. Like, it does seem like they were, with that Carlisle group, like they were able to find parties interested to bring this thing over the finish line, but the exact legalese, contractual, loopholes to get it across the finish line, they weren't able to do it in a satisfactory manner. So
the only other thing I will say is, if this leads to Alex Rodriguez needing to like take a long look into the mirror, I just hope there's a photographer there to capture it, because it's been 15 years since that Details magazine photo spread of him staring at himself in the mirror, and we could use a follow up.
Look, it's a succession plotline come to the NBA, which definitely operates like that, with a ton of backstabbing internally and people getting thrown under the bus, deals being done, handshakes and alliances and all that type of stuff. So
who says Minnesota is not interesting? We got like 10-15 minutes of palace intrigue chat at the end of a podcast at the end of March. Fantastic.
Yeah. So there's going to be plenty more pieces to pick up from all this. I'm sure we'll have details on yahoosports.com. Stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for future episodes of No Cap Room and all the episodes of Beautiful Basketball Musings that come to you on the Ball Don't Lie podcast. We thank you for listening today. We thank super producer John Gennaro for doing all the things he does to make this show look and sound great. Subscribe to Ball Don't Lie on YouTube or whatever podcast platform you are currently listening on, and leave us a 5-star review. That would be much appreciated. We thank you for listening, and we'd appreciate it if you came back again next week for another episode of No Cap Room.